Wow. Well, welcome to Yelling at Gaseous Anomalies. It sounds like someone's having gaseous anomalies right now. I'm your host and captain, Matt Ross, and I'm accompanied by my very gassy XO number one, Mike Pontone. Mike, how you doing tonight?
Okay, well, here we are. I guess that was an episode. Okay, well, that was a thing. I think some things happened. Everyone got laid at the end. Everything was completely meaningless. This was like, I don't know.
Well,
what happened?
Don't know. Well, I'll tell you what. Well, this is a shore leave. You have no heart. You have no soul. It's just silly fun.
No,
it's like a fantasy episode. You don't like this
Listen,
one?
Listen, let me take it from the... Okay, first of all, let's go here. Let's start at the beginning.
You want to go read the... You want to read the summation of the episode? Or do you want me to read the NBC press release?
You go do your NBC press release, because I'm sure it's going to be full of crap. Yes, go ahead.
While searching for a suitable rest area... By the way, fans of Yelling at Gaseous Anomalies, he's saying he didn't like shore leave, which is our... current episode, but while searching for a suitable rest area in which members of the USS Enterprise crew may take much-needed furloughs, a landing party discovers an eerie fantasy land in shore leave on NBC's television network Colorcast Star Trek on Thursday, December 29th. So that's the short version of that. So I'm assuming that you did not like this, or you have a summation you want to read to the gang?
Gene Roddenberry had the idea for a holodeck and turned the 1 minute pitch into a full episode with zero stakes and nothing happening.
Well, actually that's not how this episode came about, but that's okay. I will tell you that Shore Leave was the 17th episode film. One of the reviews of this episode said that whoever wrote this was smoking the, Romulan weed. I think that's actually pretty funny. So, and that is not who wrote this story, kind of. The actual writer was
Ted Sturgeon, famous horror writer.
Yes, and also sci-fi writer. There's a whole bunch of back and forth between Roddenberry and Sturgeon on this stuff, by the way. There were six rewrites, various rewrites. In fact, up until on shooting, Roddenberry actually drove to the scenes at Africa, USA, where the outdoor shots were, and rewrote like a good, well, almost all of the script as he was there.
I'm telling you, I'm so angry at this episode for 1,000 different reasons. I'm just going to start the top with what I liked.
Okay. Go ahead.
It looked beautiful. Fantastically shot.
True.
Gorgeous colors. Yes. They nailed the Technicolor. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they're getting such beautiful, lush tapestries in apparently natural light with everything popping. So the color correction, I don't know what you want to call it, is great. Emily Banks is a much better and much more attractive and much more charismatic yeoman than Yeoman Rand. And I like that at the end, Starfleet was not stodgy. They embraced their kind of true love thing, which you see throughout TNG too, which is like, we're all going to get laid. All right, fine. Let's get laid, which is why there are places like, you know, people openly go to Ryza, where it's just like, imagine that if I said, hey, Matt, you know, where are you going? Oh, Ryza. It's like, so you're going to go cheat on your wife, right? With a bunch of sex slaves. Like, yeah, we're going to Ryza. What else are you going to do? So past that, first of all, Matt, let me just start at the top. This is straight plagiarism. Have you ever read the short story by Ray Bradbury, The Veldt?
No, I haven't. But, you know, you could also then therefore say that Michael Crichton was a plagiarist, because this is almost Westworld, except Westworld came out in 72, not just the movie. This is not the first time that there's an idea like this. I'm not familiar with that Bradbury story. Is this the one where they have like robot shadow? Well, Marionettes Incorporated is We Shadow Forth, but what is that one?
So the Veldt is from his collection. Well, I mean, it was collected later on in
Twice 22
in Illustrated Man, and it was written in 1950, and it's about these parents who have a quote-unquote nursery for their kids, and the nursery is a holodeck, essentially. And the nursery is stuck on a wild African veldt in which lions are eating humans in the distance, and they hear a scream. And at the end, they realize that the kids have been plotting their death, and the scream that they hear, that they've been hearing, is their own, and they get, you know, stuck in the, they get trapped in the veldt and are eaten alive by the lions. And what do we have here?
Well, that's
it's
not
exactly
the same.
The same thing.
That's not
get
the same
the heck
here.
Out of here.
It is not. This is a fantasy where no one gets hurt. I mean, you could say Star Trek does this in everything, and in fact, Future Imperfect, with that weird alien kid in the in TNG, that's a whole holodeck type of thing. No one dies in that.
Ted Sturgeon was a prolific writer. I guarantee you that he read The Veldt, and then he wrote this.
You know what? It's not like you can go and ask him. He's been dead since 85.
Oh, hold on.
If I recall,
one last one. Hold the phone also. Elegy, Twilight Zone. Do you ever see that one?
Okay. No, tell me that
okay.
one.
Okay. Elegy, Twilight Zone. Three astronauts land on a planet where people are living out there, are frozen in suspended animation, living out their best fantasies. So a woman is winning a beauty contest. A guy is winning a gunfight in the Wild Wild West. Someone's slaying a dragon. And it turns out...
That sounds like... It sounds more like Westworld.
Well, and
so maybe Michael Crichton stole from a whole bunch of people.
This was 1960. So there we are. Although that one had a much darker ending, where it turned out that it was actually like a cemetery and the caretaker. Matt, same reveal. The reveal of a caretaker. They look exactly the same, except in the Twilight episode, he kills them and puts them in the cemetery.
Well, besides your darker view on most things, including liking cannibalism in the mountains, you know, Mike, that's more like a sense affair, you know, things that are common to many ideas, but that's not necessarily the same story. This story is several months after we have Balance of Terror, which our fans have all heard so far. But when we come to that, they need a rest and they find this planet. And in fact, the most recalcitrant person going on this shore leave, in fact, is Captain Kirk himself. He's the one showing the most need because he needs a shore leave.
I did like that scene.
Something I did come to discuss.
Yes, Mr. Spock, please.
I picked this up from Dr. McCoy's log. We have a crew member aboard who's showing signs of stress and fatigue. Reaction time down 9 to 12%. Associational rating norm -3.
That's much too low a rating.
He's becoming irritable and quarrelsome, yet he refuses to take rest and rehabilitation. Now, he has that right, but we found...
Crewman's right ends when the safety of the ship begins. Now, that man will go ashore on my orders. What's his name?
James Kirk. Enjoy yourself, Captain. It's an interesting planet. I believe you'll find it quite pleasant. Very much like your Earth.
That's not the same story. Yeah, it's pretty funny. Even as Yeoman tells him, Yeoman Barrows, who is a replacement for Rand. In fact, originally this was written for Yeoman Rand, but Gene Kuhn and Robert Jessamine said, yeah, well, that ain't happening. We need someone else. And then you have the very lovely actress, as you were just saying. She was in Bewitched, a whole bunch of TV shows. She was the Rheingold girl.
Rheingold?
But there's actually Rheingold the beer. There's actually a very funny piece on this is that when... Ted Sturgeon was coming in to write for this, a lot of his friends says, you know what the real problem is that they really are all over you on this. And he had heard that from his fellow writers. And in fact, there was numerous memos between Roddenberry and Sturgeon. And Sturgeon was being insulted by Roddenberry, saying that, you know, you're writing this like a novel. And Sturgeon goes, you know, just saying the word novel, that's what I do for a living. You're a writer. You should know what I'm talking about. So there were a lot of problems back and forth. Sturgeon wanted to have more complicated scenes with mechanical arms. Robert Jessamine says that costs money, so no. He also wanted to show the mechanical complex that's inside. But basically, this is a fantasy episode. The Enterprise crew gets to the planet. Their fantasies seem to be coming real, violent fantasies, in fact, but they don't understand why. Yeoman Barrows has a run-in with Don Juan, who tries to rape her. We see this Esteban Martinez with someone who should have seemed familiar to you. The actress who is with him is Barbara Baldwin. She was actually the wife or the bride-to-be in the last episode. Oh. So I always joke, like, what, you forget about your husband or your fiancé that quickly, huh? She actually plays a different named character, but you're not supposed to realize that. What you see, what's really funny, though, and if you see that beginning scene of Balance and Terror, maybe there's a reason why she forgot all about poor Tomlinson, who died in that episode.
Happy wedding day. Almost.
You won't get off my hook this easily. I'm going to marry you, mister. Battle or phaser weapons notwithstanding.
Well, meanwhile, temporarily at least, I'm still your superior officer. So get with it, mister.
So the two places this was filmed, by the way, was Africa Park, USA, which is the foresty glade area, and Vasquez Rocks, which is more famous for, you know, the episode with the Gorn. That's correct. But there is actually one line over here where they his friends had come over to Ted Sturgeon and they said, you know, Ted, you're writing for Star Trek. You know, 90% of television is crap. And then Sturgeon is famous for saying back, 90% of everything is crap. And that has been that followed him for years and years. In fact, I saw him at a science fiction convention and he was talking about that as well. But that's if you look it up, you'll say 90% of everything is crap. That was actually Ted Sturgeon, but it's usually attributed to David Gerrold for some whatever odd reason. But I think this episode was kind of interesting in its fantasy. The crew needs a break. They don't truly understand what's going on. You get weird things. You have like a strafing run of Japanese Zeros, clearly stock footage from Toro Toro Toro, because there are actually two airplanes. You have a samurai. But I think the main meat of this story, or the main issues besides McCoy dying in the middle of the second act, is the fight between Kirk and his Academy Day bully.
God, that was going on.
The Space Irish are
10
back.
Minutes. I'm like, oh
it
my.
Feels like
no,
it.
Matt. No, it didn't feel like it.
It does feel like
it
10
was
minutes.
10 minutes.
It's a little bit
it
too
went
long.
On and on and on, and it's like, oh my God, you guys have no ideas. I will say I did like the bullets popping on the ground. The squibs that they're running through looked pretty good and kind of dangerous, actually.
Yes.
And then, again, you have this long, protracted, stupid fight scene that's obviously fantasy. Obviously, it's not real.
So you were the bully then, I tell you.
No, absolutely not. I was bullied mercilessly. I was a fat kid. No.
Well, didn't you want to beat the crap out of everyone calling you names and
no,
so forth?
No, because...
Wouldn't that be your ideal
No,
fantasy?
Because, like, you know, I was just having this conversation with my wife about... We were talking about the different types of... the different people who've played Batman, right? And how my favorite iteration is Michael Keaton, and I'll tell you why. Because he plays it as... He does not play it as a moody 39-year-old who's still pissed off about his parents getting killed 25 years ago, because that would be ridiculous. People go through trauma all the time. They go through much worse trauma than seeing their parents killed in front of them, and they ascend out of it, but it does affect them subconsciously. So Michael Keaton was playing that guy as a person who likes to beat up bad guys in a high-tech suit. And he might not even realize that it's necessarily connected to his parents dying, as opposed to like moody Ben Affleck. I'm like, dude, you're 45. You haven't gone to therapy. You haven't moved on with your life from something that you were when you were a child. So long story short is no, I don't care about my childhood bullies. Absolutely not.
Well, I mean, here Kirk was, I think it was interesting that Kirk says that, you know, Finnegan would be the type to put a bowl of cold soup in your bed or have a bowl on an open door, which I always question because all the doors slide open. maybe the Academy has like that. But, you know, then you also meet one of Kirk's early loves, Ruth. And you hear that famous theme music of that love music that's in various other episodes of Star Trek. You have that there. That is not Carol Marcus. That's just one of Kirk's earlier loves. She's actually 31, the actress playing Ruth. That's her name is Shirley Bond. She does not 20 like Kirk is imagining her to be. But that entire little interesting scene is where Shatner basically is concerned, then suddenly is distracted by Ruth, and his entire mindset changes in like a weird drug way. I always found that was kind of weird. Like, Captain, we're getting life signs. We see birds. What, you don't like birds?
Yes, Mr. Rodney.
Captain, a while ago I saw, well, birds, a whole flock of them.
Don't you like birds, Mr. Rodriguez?
You know, I mean, like, what's wrong with you, Kirk? The
planet was supposed to have no animals.
Right. But I'm just saying, like, he's standing there staring at his ex-girlfriend. He goes, what, you don't like birds? I mean, like, no, I didn't say that. It's just that there's supposed to be no animals, no insect life. What did you think, though, of the way the planet was designed and seeing that? You said you were enjoying the way it was shot, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it looks beautiful.
Yes.
In terms of the way that it was designed, I mean, it was just a bunch of landscapes.
Well, it's animal park. It was an animal park. The tiger, in fact, was actually, it's a real tiger. It's not stock footage, by the way.
Oh, really?
What we're looking for here is, I think, and this is no more than educated guess, I'd like to make that clear, is some multicellular life form with stripes, huge razor-sharp teeth about 11 foot long and of the genus Felis horribilis, what we doctors, in fact, call a tiger. A tiger?
Yeah, they even had an incident where the tiger got loose. One of the things that Shatner was trying to be all macho and said, I'm going to go wrestle the tiger.
Oh,
but
dear.
The second the tiger got loose, Shatner said, instantly
Goodbye.
My testicle... He goes, instantly my testicles rose up into my Adam's apple, and the ignorant machismo that had been pulsing so heartily through my veins was replaced by sheer abject terror. So, you know, everyone was terrified of the tiger. In fact, Robert Justman said, if you have a real tiger, I'm not going to be on set, I'll tell you that much.
Absolutely.
But of course, yeah. If you'll see, look carefully, if you do ever watch this again, you'll see the tiger has... a chain around its neck.
Oh, really?
Because they really wanted that when they were shooting, was like, yeah, we're done with letting it wander around a little freely. The trainer had to get it. It's a shame, though. I will tell you that the area of Africa, USA, was eventually destroyed in storms, and all the animals on there died. The owners actually had to leave. It's very sad, actually.
No, thanks for the picking
Tippy,
up on the Sunday night, Matt.
You're welcome. Tippi Hedren bought it, though, so there you go.
Wait a
you
second.
Can live off of that.
Is this the thing that led
Shambhala.
To that? I know. Is this the thing that led to that weird movie Roar? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, you know more weird movies than I do. Apparently,
I'll send you offline. I'll send you the like a little information thing about that. That was a fascinating weird movie that took place over that they shot over like 5 years and had a bunch of real life cats that kept slicing up all the grips. It was really funny.
That sounds hilarious.
Sorry,
but not if you're a grip, you macabre bastard. But I actually like Finnegan. I think he's actually well
are you kidding me?
I like it. It's hilarious. He's supposed to be ridiculous because he's a fantasy. His name's Bruce Mars. He later comes in a couple other episodes of Star Trek, believe it or not. Emily Banks was, again, very pretty. But that little, like, love fest between her and McCoy, that was originally supposed to continue forward, but Robert Justman said no and killed that in its bud, so she was never asked to come back.
Oh, I was
to
about
me,
to say,
however,
yeah, if she ever came back. Apparently not, no.
Well, you know, the other thing in this story is there. It's basically a lot of running back and forth. They seem to be running all over the place. With the editing, it's pretty seamless to see these two disparate places in real life, Africa, USA, and Vasquez Rocks, are not near each other in any way whatsoever. But they do seem to fit right next to each other in the filming. At least that's what it looks like to me. You know, it looks like the jungle kind of stops and suddenly they're in the desert. Did you get that impression?
Yeah, I did like that. I did actually get the sense more that it was just an artificial reality as opposed to bad editing. And I mean, obviously, right. Okay, talking about Echoes of Future Trek, it's as plain as the nose in your face. This is what the holodeck would become. I mean, I'm curious if Gene Roddenberry didn't write this, if he at least was inspired by this to say, oh, okay, well, we'll just have this on a spaceship.
Well, you know, the holodeck didn't come until the animated series, actually. And also, by the way, this planet actually does come back in the animated series in Once Upon a Planet, it's called. We'll eventually hit the animated series. You know, it's something I saw in the 70s because I'm old. But I will tell you, and I strongly recommend to all of our listeners, if you can get the Alan Dean Foster recreation of the story, as well as reading the James Blish recreation of this original series live action, it adds in a lot of little things in there. Once Upon a Planet, they revisit the amusement park to find out what's happened since they were last there. This is never mentioned again, and again, we have robots or plant-based robots all over the place. That was, I thought that was a very interesting little facet of this. Did you pick up on that?
Yeah, they had
everything
some
there
lines.
Is plant-based.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even the airplane was plant-based. Well, just, you know,
the whole
it's
thing. This
creative.
Is my this is my reflection on the whole thing. And so what?
Well, it's a break. It's supposed to be a break, you know?
But
I know what it is. You just didn't like the giant rabbit. That's what it was.
That was fine. No, I thought the rabbit looked good.
Oh, you really did? The creators of the show hated it. They absolutely hated it. What about the samurai warrior that Sulu's facing down? Or his handgun? No? Just not doing it for you, Mike?
Pointless. Every 5 seconds, there's a new pointless thing. Okay, that's nice. No reason. Doesn't matter. More doesn't matter.
What are you looking for? Continuing stories? These are serials.
Matt. I'm looking
not
for
even, not
serials.
Steaks. Well, you know, I'm sure if you go there, you could probably fantasize about having steaks.
Okay. No, here. Can I do my rewrite of this episode? This a very quick.
Sure.
Rewrite.
Let me hear your rewrite of the episode.
They go there. They know exactly what it is, and they're saying, "Oh, okay, this is a." Anything goes planet, right? And it's a fun. They're making artificial environments. Turns out they scratch below the surface, and there are people enslaved in like Matrix-esque things where they have to use their consciousness to inhabit these bodies and act things out, and they feel the pain that's being inflicted on them, and then the Enterprise has to come together and release them from the hedonist planet.
That's similar to an Enterprise episode. No. You know, there's where that's later. There's also the return again to this planet, and yeah, that's pretty much about it. For the most part, it is meaningless, but it's supposed to be a needed break from their very stress-filled set series. In real life, by the way, What Our Little Girls Are Made Of was just being shown on TV, so that's a little weird as well.
Let's kind of think about this. What's another Trek episode that was very light?
Very light. You mean so far? Nothing. We actually don't really have any light ones. I mean, like, if you're thinking about for comedy's sake, you've got A Piece of the Action, which is Chicago, which you haven't seen that yet.
No.
Chicago
no,
Gang.
No, I'm talking
Wars.
About
you
any
got
Trek.
Trouble with the Tribbles.
Like, what's a Trek episode where there were almost no stakes? One comes to mind.
I'm sure that... Okay, tell me. The one with Casino on DS9?
Yes. The one with...
Well, there were...
Wait, hold on. Yeah, exactly. The 60s casino heist movie.
Yeah, that actually did have stakes. If they didn't solve it,
Vic Fontaine was going to get
holographic character
rewritten. Right, but I mean, the ship wasn't going to explode or anything. Or, listen, if you're not going to have world-ending stakes, then you have to at least have character development. So another thing with Vic Fontaine was a really, really powerful episode was when Nog had lost his leg and he got entrenched with Vic and got really into running the casino because he was suffering from PTSD and was having phantom pain in his fake leg.
Yeah, but that episode, yeah, I think it's only a paper moon. That basically a PTSD and suicide. So that actually is not that light. It's actually quite heavy.
Right. You can, if you're not going to have outward stakes, you have to have inward stakes. What were the stakes here? Kirk had to learn how to relax?
Well, not every story has to have issues of fate and destiny, and sometimes high stakes aren't always there. Kirk does need to learn how to relax, and, you know, look at all the things he just did. He fought several godlike beings. He killed his best friend. He had a cat-and-mouse game with the Romulans. And, you know, don't forget he held that penis like stalagmite. So there's a lot of things going on right there. The actual stakes were they didn't understand because you couldn't tell what was going on. He saw his best friend McCoy being murdered. You didn't know if that was actually permanent or otherwise. They couldn't figure out, but up until one point, you have no idea what's going on. It's a weird fantasy-like episode. Like the review said.
And then at the end, he just like, oh, this was a fantasy all along? Ha ha, everyone beam down. I'm like, what? What? No.
But the caretaker who shows up, Oliver McGowan, by the way, who seemed to keep forgetting his line. That right? Was my WTF moment of this episode. It's like, dude, get it right. It drives me nuts. They reshot that scene numerous times because he kept forgetting that line, those couple of lines.
I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah, if you notice, he's like hesitating on his what he has to say.
Oh.
But yeah, it was a little silly. The whole thing was silly. I still like Finnegan, even though that scene is too long. I like that Kirk likes Ruth, but it's supposed to be a break from their terrible experiences of late, especially this last episode. You know, it is a light fluff piece. I'm not going to say it's the best thing ever, but I don't really think there's much more else to it. It's just a fantasy. To me, they should have picked up on the fact that everything they were thinking was coming on to reality, you know?
I will say one little thing that I thought was very hip for the time was in the beginning when Kirk's back asserting him. He thinks that Spock is giving him a massage and he's enjoying it. And when he realizes the beautiful young woman is, he's like, ugh, okay, get away from me to the lady.
Yeah, I thought that was funny. No, I think it was more like, don't do that. It's just very funny because I think also – if you notice, Nimoy has a bemused look on his face as he's walking forward. That's actually very funny.
Yes.
Just to want to let you know, by the way, of the actors, again, there's that split between everyone. Bruce Mars, who's playing Finnegan, says, well, Nimoy was really into his part and very stiff. Everyone else was saying, well, Bill Shatner was a nice guy and jokey. I just think that's very funny. I think, again, that's where we have the big issue between the parties
I was just listening to a podcast today with Jason Alexander talking to Wayne Knight, who plays Newman on Seinfeld. And
right. Our
boy Armin Shimerman was recently on a interview where he said that he had a really bad time on Seinfeld, that he was a guest star and that they were not very welcoming at all and that they were not kind to him and that he had a very bad time, especially coming from DS9. And Jason Alexander asked him about that. And he said, like, were we mean? Because, of course, Wayne Knight was not a regular. He was a recurring character. And he said,
right. You
guys weren't mean, but you were very focused on the work. And you were very, very interested in getting the material across because you knew that it was successful and you knew that it was very, very well written and that it was like lightning in a bottle. So the point to say that I'm willing to bet that whether or not McCoy was good, was nice, or DeForest Kelly was nice. Sorry, DeForest Kelly or if Shatner was nice, it probably depends on how hard they were working that day. I mean, it's difficult to be an actor, you know?
No, it is. You know, Shatner has often come and is like, I've got like 10 pages of dialogue to memorize and different emoting scenes. And my in his famous arguments against Takai is like, and he's got like maybe one, maybe two lines and he's complaining.
Right. And he's complaining that you're not saying hi to me when I'm walking in the morning. It's like, give me a break. By the way, I do have to say, I did enjoy, I was watching closely the stunt doubles going back and forth. Shatner did a fair amount of his own stunts. You know,
yes, he did.
It's pretty obvious when there's a twist, but because it's obvious when there's a turn, it's also obvious when he's taking a punch or throwing a punch.
Right. Right. Well, you know, Shatner's stunt double is always in there. That's Eddie Paskey. Eddie Paskey, by the way, said, I'm not working with that Tiger 2.
Hey, man, everyone's got their limits.
Yeah, there you go. That's Mr. Leslie, by the way, to remind everyone on this. Yeah, well, that's pretty much about it. I mean, I guess we should go to our final thoughts or our final grades on this. Mike, since you seem to be romantically involved with this episode, what are you going to give this on our very scientific 1 to 10 scale?
4 out of 10. Not
wow.
as bad
that's
as Miri.
Really down.
But not as bad or pointless or annoying as Miri. But just like, and listen, beautifully done. And actually, I dare say, very well acted, except for Finnegan. And I'll even say this. It's not that guy's fault. It's the editor's fault or the scriptwriter's fault. You guys could not, your story could not justify 10 pages of a cackling Irishman punching you in the face. It just doesn't work.
Tell you what. We'll go to an Irish bar. We'll pick a fight. We'll see how long you can last. I'll just stand back there. Goes, no. He said your mom something. Yeah, that's it.
Oh yeah, it's so funny at the end where Kirk is like all happy when it's a reveal, and meanwhile his eye is swelling up like a balloon. I'm like, what? No, you would not be okay with this. That you guys got the shit kicked out of you.
Hey, but and he got his shirt ripped. That's actually made fun of in a movie called Galaxy Quest.
Of course.
See you got your shirt off.
Yes.
That's always hilarious. Shatner's shirt is always ripped in some weird way. Just a couple of other notes. The scenes where they're like running through that rock canyon, that's actually at night. They used arc lights to make sure that
you
could see. Yeah, those are all night scenes. If you take a look at seems extremely bright around them or they seem extra shiny, that's all from set lights. Those are not, that's actually at nighttime. It's like, wow, those are some damn bright lights. The other thing I actually liked in this was the little antenna following them around everywhere. But it is a lot of running back around, so I'm actually going to give this one a 7. I only like it because every time I see it, I have a good time with them running back and forth and seeing that glade area. I enjoy seeing that. I enjoy learning a little bit of Kirk's background with how he was picked on because he was so serious. And we actually heard that before in Where No Man Has Gone Before, because he was a stack of books with legs, if you recall Gary Mitchell saying that to him. But it's a nothing episode. There's really not much else to say about it. But you could say it's a fun diversion from the seriousness of, let's say, Balance of Terror or the fact that they just did the Corbomite maneuver. I don't think there's anything else we have to say about that. So I guess we'll just round this up here. Our next episode coming up will be will not be Shore Leave. It'll be the Galileo 7, an episode with Mr. Spock in command of the Galileo shuttlecraft and what happens. And that'll be coming up next on Yelling at Gaseous Anomalies. Mike, you have anything else you want to add to our valiant listeners out there?
No, Captain, it's always a pleasure, even if it is not the best episode. And also, I might have been extra harsh on this coming off of my favorite episode last week.
Balance of Terror?
Yes. No, not the one before that. I'm sorry.
Conscience of the King?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I understand. Different strokes for different folks. Well, that just about does it for all of us here on Yelling at Gaseous Anomalies. And remember, if you want to contact us, email us at yellingatgas@gmail.com or like, share, and subscribe us on YouTube and all your favorite podcasters out there. And we'll see you next time at Yelling at Gaseous Anomalies. So, Mike, live long and prosper, and have a good night.
And you, sir.
All right. Take care, everyone.